Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, our program today is for budding midlife entrepreneurs. Let's say you're seriously considering creation of your own small business in 2013. What questions do you need to ask yourself and answer before you take the plunge? Keep in mind that fewer than 1% of all new businesses receive third-party funding, so be prepared to self-finance. And remember also that 50% of all startups fail within the first 5 years. Now, believe me, I'm not trying to stifle your entrepreneurial spirit. I just want to ensure that you enter into the new venture with your eyes wide open, and also help you move from esoteric dreams into action if you're serious about it. As a New Year's present, I've invited an expert guest who can answer some of your questions. Tim McEnany will share what he's learned during 30 years as an entrepreneur. He's co-founder of Purchasing Net, Inc., which thrived for 30 years before he sold it, and he's an award-winning innovator. He developed the first web-based automatic purchasing software. He's presently a consultant, and he's author of the book Unlocking Your Entrepreneurial Potential. And a key advantage of Tim's book, it's written for the self-funded entrepreneur, those 99% of us who will have need to depend upon our own resources to launch our business. Well, hello, Tim, and welcome.
Hi, Roy. It's good to be with you.
Well, tell us, why now, despite our weak recovery, this may be a perfect time to start your own business?
Well, I always like to break things down into four categories as far as what it takes to start a business and to run a successful business. So I talk about the four M's. And the four M's are money, marketing, management, and mindset. So if we look at those four M's in tough economic times, there can be some advantages to starting a business in a down economic time. So, for example, lots of goods and services are less expensive now.
Yeah.
People are willing to negotiate with whether they're contractors or suppliers or vendors or whoever they might be. There's never been a better time to start a business in terms of the online tools that are available to the budding entrepreneur, whether it's anything from email to search engine optimization to any of the social networks. So there are advantages in starting in a downtime, and you may even face less competition because of the bad economy.
Yeah, and you know, the little guys can sure compete with the big guys on the Internet these days.
That's right. Our company was a relatively, I guess you'd call it a mid-sized company. We had about 45 employees. I don't know if that would be in the small or mid-sized category, probably right in between. We competed successfully for over 25 years with three large multinational companies, publicly traded, with well over $1 billion valuation.
Wow.
So
a
small company can compete. You just have to be a little more nimble than the big guys. And I think
a little more nimble and a little more quick.
Yeah. And know when to get in and know when to get out and pick your area of expertise and really do a great job in that area.
Well, if you were counseling somebody one-on-one right now about starting a new business, what's the one biggest mistake that you would point out that most new entrepreneurs make?
Yeah, that's an easy one, Roy. The one that I see time and time again is people that decide to go into business and they pick a product or a service that they may understand and they may know how to perform it, but they don't understand their marketplace.
No.
So who is your marketplace? Who would buy your product or service? How would they go about deciding to spend money to buy your product and service? How do you reach them? How do you get them to take the next step? These are all the critical things in picking a business to start.
And how much would they pay for your product? Is it really?
That's right. I've heard that one too. Well, I asked all my friends if they would like this product or service, and they say, sure, I'd love to have that product or service.
Give it to me for free, and I'll use
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. The question is, are people willing to part with dollars in their wallet in order to buy your product or service? And can you demonstrate that that's a real possibility? Do you have enough testing to prove, at least a proof of concept, that it's a viable, potentially profitable business?
Yeah. Well, given that only 1% of the startups receive third-party financing, and most of us are not wealthy other than those two people who won that $589 million Powerball recently, what piece of advice would you offer to the self-funded entrepreneur to get started?
Yeah, and I think this may be one of the advantages for middle-aged entrepreneurs, and that is you need to save some money along the way. You need to bank some money from your job or from whatever source of income you may have in order to build a little nest egg or a little safety fund that you can dip into if necessary to help start your own business.
Yeah, you know, that's so crucial, because if you start business with absolutely nothing and you're in a panic mode, your creativity is shunted away. You just can't do it that way, because you're always running around with your head like a chicken with your head chopped off, and you don't really have time to be creative and to get all the groundwork done if you're in a panic mode.
That's right. What we have found, in the real world of starting a business, you almost have to plan on spending three times as much money as you think it will take.
Yeah, that's a good point. It never happens as fast and as easy as what you'd like it to happen.
Exactly, and you really need to be okay with that. And, of course, that's kind of where the risk-reward analysis comes in that you need to go through before you pull the trigger.
Well, I notice also on your website, another thing in starting small, you talk about running a proof of concept pilot project, and that seems like a very wise thing to do before you run out and try to raise multi-millions in money. You prove that something will work on a small scale.
Well, absolutely, and it's good to manage your own risk of starting a business, but it's essential to getting funding. If you ever want to get funding, you need to have a track record.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I read a blog every week reviewing the entrepreneurs on Shark Tank, the TV show.
Oh, huh. That's interesting.
And I've done that for the last several years.
Yeah, I'd love to read that.
What you'll find is that typically the contestants are the entrepreneurs who just have an idea and then stand there and say, oh, just think about how big this could be. And then when asked, what are your actual sales over the last year? They kind of cough and say, we haven't launched it yet.
Yeah.
And those they never, ever get investment unless there's just something incredibly special about them or their product.
Yeah, that's so. Do you have any ideas for inexpensive startups that won't require multi-millions in seed money?
Well, it's got to be all based on the Internet today. At least in terms of your marketing effort, one of the four M's, the use of the Internet, will cut your costs way down. So any product or service that can be either promoted or sold or provided using the Internet is a great way to go today.
Yeah. Well, in your book, you state that 32 is an ideal age to start a business, and it's good that you have experience in at least one large company so you can see how things should and should not be done from experience. But is 45 or even 55 too old to become an entrepreneur and start a business?
No, it is absolutely not too old. As a matter of fact, one of the statistics that I saw recently is that Americans in the demographic of age 55 to 64 are currently starting businesses at a rate 28% higher than the adult average.
Wow.
So I think it's definitely one of the top three demographics going right now as far as new business startups.
Yeah, and I think it's a huge advantage, all those years of experience working for somebody else. I know it's a plunge, but you certainly have observed. I've worked for a number of companies, and I've seen some really stupid things that companies do and some really smart things, and I think it really helps when you're starting your own business.
Yeah, I agree. I worked for 11 years in different corporations, two of them very large companies, IBM and Singer, and two smaller companies before I started the first business.
Oh.
And just as you said, I learned a lot of the right way to do things. A lot of that was at IBM, quite frankly, and I utilized that in our own businesses for the next 30 years. Conversely, I also saw some management practices and some maniac bosses in action that I never wanted to duplicate in my own company.
Well, I've worked for, I think, five major corporations, and four out of the five are no longer in business. So I've seen more of the negatives than the positives, I'm afraid.
I'll tell you, good management is hard to come by, isn't it?
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, here's a shocker. Why is drafting a business plan a waste of time? I always thought that was the first thing you were supposed to do when you were starting up a business.
Oh, yeah. The college professors love me for that comment. because, of course, that's a lot of what they teach in business schools is how to create a business plan. And here's why I say it's not a great idea, at least during the business startup.
Yeah.
Because most of your assumptions in a business plan will turn out to be wrong.
Yeah.
And they'll turn out to be wrong very quickly. So the business plan tends to be a static document. You do it once, or maybe you do it once a year, and you put it in a binder and you stick it on your, on the top of your desk and you never look at it again.
Yeah.
So it's not an operating tool. It's not something to help you run the business. It's really something for third-party investors, and that's where it is required. But my pitch to all entrepreneurs is don't bother even looking for a third-party investment until you have some kind of a demonstrated track record, or at least a proof of concept. So
rather than
start off and spending hours and days on developing a business plan, just wait. I think our first business plan was on a cocktail napkin.
Yeah, that's probably. I can certainly second that. I've had two or three projects where I spent hours and hours with other guys and on the computer developing all these sophisticated models and that we were going to show to investors, and never got off first base on that. And then with a couple fellows, we sat down and we said, why don't we just start small and open up this little wholesale insurance brokerage, and we did, and we were successful at that for a number of years, but these business plans just sat back and collected dust, and it also can lead to paralysis of analysis. You're always tweaking these ridiculous numbers, and you don't even, the assumptions are just made up out of your head, and they don't really mean anything.
Well, you just touched on something that is really important to all entrepreneurs, and maybe even especially middle-aged entrepreneurs, and that is start small. Don't be afraid to start with a very incomplete product or service, or maybe even no product or service. Maybe it's just a concept that you want to test using social networks, for example, or email. Something that's very low overhead, something that will cost you very little, but you'll get good feedback and determine if that's the way you want to go.
Yeah, that's excellent. Well, here's an interesting question that you raise. Should husbands and wives go into business together? I know I've been married for almost 40 years and love my wife very much, but every time we're working on project around the house, we get into arguments, and so I wouldn't dream of going into business with her. But does this usually work?
Well, that's a good question. Most people I know say, boy, if I ever worked with my spouse, I think I'd kill him. so it's a pretty tricky thing. But I would say if you're on the same page, you want the same objectives, If you communicate clearly, especially about household duties,
that's a good thing.
And maybe most important, that you have complementary skills.
Yeah, so that's a good point.
The last thing you want to be doing is tripping over each other at work and contradicting each other, you know, on the same subject. So it worked out very nicely with myself and Lauren, my wife. We actually started as business partners and then got married after we started the business.
Oh, that's a good way to do it.
We kind of did it backwards from that standpoint. But, you know, we learned very quickly, you know, the best way to divide the responsibilities. And the way we did that is, you know, Lauren handled everything to do with the customers and everything that happened after the sale, and I kind of handled everything before the sale.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent combination of skills. One problem I find with, you know, going into business with your wife would be, or your spouse if you're a woman, would be separating work from play and relaxation. And I would think you'd tend to carry over your work day into the evenings and with your children. It would kind of interfere with your social life and other activities if you were always talking about business all the time.
Well, that, you know, that's a real danger, and I think if you talk to our daughter, who is now 25 years old, working in a midtown Manhattan, she would say that she had listened to business discussions every night for 18 years before she left to go to college. That, you know, that's the bad news. The good news is the first week she was in college, one of the business professors said, "Who here knows what a business plan is and how to create one?" And her hand shot up. And she was the only one in the room that knew just from listening to us how to do that and why it was important and when not to use it.
You know, I've also heard experiences where couples formerly were married and they were still successful business partners, but they were now divorced. Sometimes it works out in strange ways.
Yeah, that'd be a tough one.
Yeah. Well, how do you go about hiring the right people, and how do you compensate them in the startup phases if funds are limited? Or maybe you shouldn't even try to hire anybody, but you may not have all the skills that you need to get the thing launched, and that's always been a tough point for me, is how you recruit people into the deal. You know, do you offer a share in the ownership, or how do you do that when you're limited in funds?
Yeah, that's always a tough one. You know, I think it all, you know, starts with that kind of inventory of the four M's, and, you know, do you need to hire somebody to start your business? And it certainly, if you have experience in management and managing money and marketing and can get the right mindset, you probably don't want to hire anybody, at least until you're close to profitable. And then once you've gone beyond proof of concept and you've generated some profits, at that point you have kind of a decision to make. Do you want to grow the company, increase the revenues and hopefully the profitability, or do you just want to keep moving along as a one-man, one-woman company and, of course, you know, be cash flow positive and live on that cash flow? So that's step one.
I did that for years, actually, working out of the basement of my home with a wholesale insurance brokerage. And the only real downside to that is my wife and I never really got a real vacation for years. And, you know, I wished in hindsight that I'd done something a little different to bring some support in there. And I probably should have taken a little more risks and, you know, maybe refinanced the house or done something to raise some money so that I could have brought somebody on board. But hindsight is 50.
Right. And you know, the good news today is it doesn't cost as much to start a business.
No.
So you can, like with us, it was somewhere around $50,000 to get started in our software business.
Yeah.
This is back in the early 80s. Today, there are people, a lot of them college-age kids, you know, starting businesses for, you know, several hundred dollars.
Yeah.
If they have some skills. So it's the good news is you can determine your risk and minimize your risk by just spending some time, certainly time. And hopefully it's you're spending the time when you're working for somebody else. Now, that doesn't mean that you're doing this testing of your idea while you're on the payroll of somebody else.
No, certainly not.
But when you get home, you know, the clock keeps ticking, and you can put in another 4 or 5 hours, and you have to make that determination if you're willing to make that sacrifice. So that's a, you know, that's a 15-hour workday, and you'll be doing that for quite a while until you minimize the risk and can launch your business.
Yeah, what about, you know, we're constantly inundated on the Internet and other means with these network marketing type opportunities these days, multi-level marketing or whatever, some version of that. Do you think many of these are a good idea for an entrepreneur, or is that really not the way to go?
I think if I can put that into the same category as a franchise,
which
it's a different structure legally, but if I can put it into the same category, what that does for the entrepreneur is it really shares responsibilities with somebody hopefully more knowledgeable than you in certain areas. So, for example, let's say, I'm a pretty good manager, and I know how to manage money. I think I have the right mindset to start my own business, but I don't know anything about marketing.
Yeah,
I've never done marketing. I've never done selling. I don't even know where to start. Then taking a look at a franchise, and of course, doing a lot of due diligence is important, and also some of the multi-level opportunities can be a good idea because they will provide you with the structure, the expertise, and the process to become successful.
Yeah, I always tell people, though, that they should think of it in terms of, well, say your name is Mary Jones. Is Mary Jones, Inc., or Mary Jones, it doesn't have to be incorporated, obviously, but think of it in terms of yourself and then evaluate all the franchise and multi-level opportunities in terms of what your personal objectives are and which one fit your objectives and your lifestyle, and much less so than what they promise in the ads with a guy standing in front of a Cadillac and a swimming pool, little effort.
Regardless, you have to do a lot of due diligence, talk to a lot of references. You know, you ask about hiring people, too, and that goes for hiring people as well, and that is, you know, try to find references that weren't given to you as references. So, in other words, let's say if I worked, somebody worked for the XYZ company, and they gave Mary Jones as a reference, would I call Mary? Yeah, I probably would, but I'd also try to find somebody else in that organization in and around that department or function and try to do a little due diligence and ask some questions of them as well.
That's exactly right. They always give these references on these home-based business opportunities of people to call, and those are the people, obviously, maybe the 2% that succeeded.
Yeah, or it's their best friend.
Yeah.
Well,
we're just about out of time, but tell us about how people can obtain your book, Unlocking Your Entrepreneurial Potential, Marketing, Money, and Management Strategies for the Self-Funded Entrepreneur, because I really like it.
They can either go to my website, which is timmcenany.com, so that's TimMcenany.com, or maybe easier, just go straight to Amazon. The Kindle version of my book is selling for $3.
Oh, wow.
And so for less than a cup of coffee, you can get some knowledge. And it also includes an entrepreneur's IQ test. So that can be helpful in evaluating if you're ready to start your own business.
Yeah, I like it. It's an A to Z roadmap of what you need to do if you're really serious about becoming an entrepreneur. And it's not a lot of that theoretical stuff that, you know, like you say, the professors do.
It's all based on experience.
I would also highly recommend that website. On there's four really great YouTube videos that Tim recorded, and one of them is one piece of advice and the biggest single mistakes, and also dealing with stress, which is obviously an issue when you're starting a business because you're no longer getting a regular paycheck. And you have to organize your own work days. You're no longer told what to do. And there's obviously a lot of stressful things that arise, and I felt those are real short videos, but they were extremely interesting and I thought valuable to somebody that was considering starting a business.
Thank you, Roy.
And certainly highly recommend Tim's book if you are considering that in the new year. And thank you so much for being our guest today.
Well, I'm welcome. You're welcome, Roy. It was my pleasure, and I hope your middle-aged listeners get something out of this and can move ahead and start their own businesses.
Well, let's hope they do. Thanks a lot, Tim. Well, to conclude our program today, I've located an excellent website for anyone seriously considering starting a business in 2013. The website includes the 10 questions you should ask yourself before you start a business, and also a business financing quiz. The website is www.top10financing.com, and the expert behind the website is our second guest today. She's Stephanie Skaggs, and she's a serial entrepreneur who has started 11 companies, and she's author of the brand new book, Get Business Financing Now, How to Get on the Fast Track to Raising Capital for Your Company. And hello, Stephanie, and welcome.
Roy, how are you today?
I'm just fine. Let's start with the basic. What personality traits or traits must you have to succeed as an entrepreneur? You know, I've been considering for years and I'm going to start my business and I kick these ideas around in my head, but how do I know that I really have it in me to do that kind of thing?
Well, I think that the first thing is really to look at yourself and to say, okay, you know, do I have a passion for what I'm thinking about starting? Because you have to have a passion in order to, you know, keep the persistence going in the rough times as well as the good times. But having a passion for what you're doing is really a key thing. I would probably put that at the top of the personality traits. The other thing would be, you know, are you a self-starter? Because you're going to not have somebody directing you in terms of what to do. You're going to have to figure it all out yourself in a lot of cases. So being a self-starter, being persistent, and being committed once you set a goal that you're going to follow through and that you're going to, you know, not just give up easily, but you're going to be committed and persistent in following on with what you've decided to do. And I would say probably one of the other things is confident that you can succeed. So
yeah, you have to have a lot of confidence in yourself, that's for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
But you also definitely need to know what you aren't good at, because I've known people that thought they were such geniuses that they could do it all themselves, and they end up in a lot of trouble.
Oh, yeah. I don't really advocate anybody doing a business in a vacuum, that you do need help, and having a team around you that can supplement what your strengths are, I think, is a key point.
Yeah, I was thinking of a passion. I think of people that love to putter around cars, and, you know, that's a passion they do on all weekends. Why not start a garage if you're that good at it and maybe restore autos or something? That'd be
right.
The kind of thing that somebody would be very passionate for, I'm sure.
Yes, I think passion is certainly kind of the driving force behind a lot of really good entrepreneurs.
Well, say you have the passion, but how can you tell if you're generally willing to spend the time and the money and all the resources that are needed to succeed? In other words, what are you willing to give up?
Exactly. Well, and that's often the way I ask the question to entrepreneurs that I'm coaching in my business. I ask them, you know, what exactly are you willing to give up to get your business working properly and up and running? You know, whether it's spare time, whether it's your life savings, you know, whether it's vacations and toys and possessions that you might have. I mean, it's really kind of key to say, what am I willing to give up? And if you're not really willing to give things up, and not things in the material sense, but it could be your time or your, you know, it could be money, it could be possessions, whatever. But you have to be willing to, you know, basically invest everything that you've got into your business.
And you know what, there's another key aspect to that, if you're married and you have a family, is what is your spouse and your children willing to give up in terms of having you around if you're going to be spending 16 hours, 6-7 days a week, and, you know, they may be required to make financial sacrifices. You know, conceivably might have to move to a smaller home temporarily, or, you know, they might have to change their college plans or whatever. So you really need to have them on board, or you're going to have a big pull again, an anchor every morning.
Certainly.
When you
Yeah, certainly having family buy-in is a key thing, because starting a business is not just, again, it's not done in a vacuum.
Yeah, I speak from personal experience, because I remember my wife saying, when are we going to start making some money?
Yeah, when's this going to pay off?
Yeah.
And a lot of times it takes a while for a new business to pay off. You know, may be that you're pouring a lot into it before you get the rewards of that.
Yeah, please explain, in fact, the importance of evaluating how long it'll take to generate a profit, because I think that's a big drawback that so many people have. They think, you know, they'll just open the door and the customers will come rolling in.
Yeah, well, I think this points to the fact that, you know, even if you don't need a business plan for outside reasons, like if you're trying to obtain financing or whatnot, you should really have a business plan for your own internal workings and a real understanding of, you know, what the cost is going to be and then when you expect to become profitable. But really sitting down, pencil and paper or computer or whatever you do to evaluate when your business is going to be making money is absolutely key. And, you know, you need to make sure that you have some kind of financial capability in order to sustain yourself during that time where it's not profitable, because it's going to take maybe, you know, weeks, months, even potentially years before a business can become profitable, depending on what the business is.
I'll tell you one thing for sure. If you're sitting there in panic, say if you've hired a few people or even, you know, if you're just trying to meet your bills and you don't have the faintest idea how you're going to pay the mortgage this month or you're going to do this or that, it's going to be awfully hard to be creative and to buckle down and get that business going if it's a panic mode all the time.
Yeah, yeah. If you're feeling under the gun and pressure, a lot of times that really stops the creativity in terms of what, you know, thinking through problems and how you're going to solve and come up with solutions.
That's why I always tell people they really need to make those tough financial decisions up front before they plunge into the business, and they also need to probably assume the worst, because it usually takes three times as long or whatever than what people first anticipate they're going to take to earn a profit.
Yeah, that's true. But I tell you, the reward of having your own business can just be more satisfying than anything anybody can imagine. So, yeah, it takes a lot of planning, and it takes effort, and it takes sometimes commitment not only on yourself and your family and your finances and so forth, but the rewards can be incredible.
Yeah, unless you go on these websites where they show somebody standing in front of a Mercedes with a swimming pool and back, and all you have to do is send in a small donation and you work from home and you'll suddenly be rich.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. Well, some of our prior guests on this program have emphasized the difficulty in obtaining new business financing in these times, but in your book you talk about some creative new strategies. And obviously people need to get that book to get a full picture of those. But can you highlight one or two of these new financing? Because I know bank loans aren't that easy to get these days.
Yeah, bank loans are pretty tough to get these days. Well, let me just give you a couple examples of newer types of financing that really weren't in existence 5-10 years ago.
Yeah,
one of which is called crowdfunding. Maybe your audience has heard of that. But crowdfunding essentially is where people in a crowd who support a project or a type of business or so forth, essentially what they're doing is giving small donations to a project, you know, be it a company or so forth. And by a lot of individuals donating to a project, that's how people can, in cases, they can raise up to tens of thousands of dollars for a new business.
That actually works. That's almost like going down in the corner with a cup.
It's almost like that, but it's using the beauty of our age, which is the Internet. So,
well,
you know,
I'll
it's not you, just, you know, post your project and they will come. You really have to work it to get people to donate to it. So having a good network is important.
That would seem like a really tough task to get somebody to give money to something that was for your profit eventually with nothing back. But
well, a lot of times with crowdfunding, what you're doing is offering something in return. Maybe it's a discount on the product that you're going to be selling. So it's kind of an incentive-based donation.
Yeah, that makes
really
more sense.
It's really a way to think of it.
Well, what about there are other new methods that really require probably some share and ownership or a loan, or can you name one or two?
One of the other methods that is similar to crowdfunding but not exactly is called peer-to-peer lending, which is essentially, again, it's utilizing the internet, and there are a number of websites where people who have money who want to invest in something can go and basically look for projects or businesses and so forth, and they will be loaning the money. So in crowdfunding, people donate the money, not expecting to get it back, whereas in peer-to-peer lending, what they do is they actually loan somebody the money with a, you know, set, you know, what the terms are. They would actually define what the terms are of that
loan. And with the interest rates so low on conventional, like government funds and bonds and things like that, I would think there would be a lot of interest in, obviously there's higher risk, but potentially significantly higher return from those.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's one good way, kind of a both sides. So for investors, people who are looking to getting a better return on their money than they might be getting, you know, in the bank or in the stock market, they can loan out their money. And I think private lending is really, it's kind of coming back into favor these days because the interest rates are so low and people just can't get a return on their money when they're trying to invest.
Well, how about people that want to get some equity in the project or those kind of things available?
That's another approach. So we've kind of covered creative sources, like with crowdfunding, and then creative debt sources, which is the peer-to-peer lending. And creative equity sources are happening, again, because of the internet and being able to connect people together using what we call angel networks, which are essentially investors, again, who have money, who maybe want to invest in a company or a project, but they would actually be looking for an equity share or an ownership in that company so that they can, you know, reap the rewards of the profits from you know, the get-go on. And so
somebody needs to decide up front is what share are they willing to give to somebody to get that financing they need.
Right. And one of the things that I really focus on in the book is to help people to understand these different types of funding for a business, whether it's equity, whether it's debt, or whether it's kind of a creative source that maybe is not really equity or debt, kind of like crowdfunding is.
Yeah.
And to help a business owner decide which of those types of financing is best for their particular business situation.
Well, that certainly sounds like something that anyone that's serious about it would definitely want to get a hold of your book, Get Business Financing Now, and tell people the best way to get that book.
The best way, really, and to get a bunch of other free information is to go to my website, which is www.top10financing.com, and that's the number 10.
And that's the number 10, right, the 10 rather than writing it out.
Exactly. So top, the number 10, and then financing. So
yeah, that's
www.top10financing.com.
Yeah, and I would definitely recommend that, like I said, that top 10 or that 10 questions you should ask yourself is worth the price of admission, which, of course, is free to your website.
Exactly.
But that's definitely worth looking at. And we want to thank you so much, Stephanie. I wish we had more time because your expertise is vast, but our time isn't. But thank you so much for being on the program today.
Certainly. I enjoyed it, Roy. Have a great day.
Thank you. Same to you.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.